time to feel the rush of the round table live on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Ryan Doyle and special guest co-host Tamara Cherry in for Jay Michaels this afternoon. The Roundtable brought to you by Burke Financial, offering homeowners personalized mortgage solutions for approvals in less in as little as 1 hour and fast funding. Visit burkefinancial.ca, brokerage license number 13111. We are joined by Carmen Wong, former journalist, communications advisor to the Premier, founder of KPW Communications. Nice to have you.
Good afternoon.
And Scott Reed, News Talk 1010 political analyst, and a guy who might be crying in his beer tonight, I'm not sure.
What the heck is that? I'm going to start with that.
I don't know. It's been a while since we've chatted about the Stanley Cup and the whole bit.
Yeah. I don't know if this is permissible on radio, but you're a jinx dink. That's not cool.
What does that even mean? What does that even mean?
Means you're a dink and you're a jinx, so stop it. Knock it off right now. Don't be
fair
talking
enough.
About that.
Let's get into the matters of the day then, shall we? People with a vacant home in Toronto will be hit, likely, with a new tax designed to cool off the housing market. It is a vacant home tax. It will start next year. Scott, you just heard from the mayor. He says this works like gangbusters out in the West Coast, so why not do it here? I've got a lot of trouble with people telling me, government telling me, what I can and can't do with a property that I own. And if I keep it vacant, there's a litany of reasons I might want that property. Property vacant. I just don't think it's the government's business.
Yeah, you're wrong. He's right. It really helped a lot in BC. When it comes to real estate and housing, I mean, these are complex things. There's interest rates drive most of it, but you know, it's housing supply, it's all kinds of issues. But one of the major issues in a major urban center like Vancouver, like Toronto, is that people buy them up offshore as investment properties. They don't live in them and they just use it and they sit on it and they say, okay, well then I'll sell it at a premium. And so it makes sense. If you're not in your house for 6 months, you're not living in your house. That's the truth. And so I think it's a smart thing to look at. I think it's not the answer, but it's part of the answer. And I think your reservations, frankly, are modest in comparison with the scale of the problem.
So Carmen, then, if Scott's right, and this is part of the answer, but not all of the answer, what are we missing here? I mean, Ryan's talked at length today about the need for Toronto to get busy and start building low-income housing on our green spaces. Do you agree with that assessment, or should we be looking somewhere else?
I think we got to look at all the options, and this is one of the ones that has worked. But I mean, for me, I have a question on the enforcement, and maybe government has answered this, I don't know. But, like, how would this work? Is it the honor system? Is it neighbors reporting on each other? Like, what if someone decided just to set their rent really high and no one rents it, and the owner says, you know, it's got to be empty because they can't rent it? I also question whether or not 1% of the home value is enough to force people not to own vacant homes. For example, in Vancouver, where the mayor has said it's worked, it's a bit higher than that. And so for them, it definitely has worked to shift empty condos into the rental market. But is 1% enough? So, I mean, those are just some of the questions I would have.
So from what I understand in terms of the accountability aspect, I think that property owners will be required to report every year on what the previous 6 months of the previous 6 month period of the previous year were. And also the city has said that they would be able to audit different properties at random if they so choose. So I'm assuming that they're probably aware of people that own multiple properties, for example, and would maybe go after those people. But if they're like the tax man, maybe not. Maybe they go after the little guys. That could be problematic.
We had quite the heated conversation at 3:30 this afternoon. In fact, it stretched all the way to 4 o'clock about reporters that were on Capitol Hill the day of the Capitol Hill riots. A number of them now not going back to work because they feel they were traumatized by what went on that day. Scott, it's not that I don't have sympathy for reporters in their field and journalists in their field. And I've been out in the field as well doing things where stuff has gone sideways. I think that there are things that are very traumatic. I just don't chalk up the Capitol Hill riots as something a reporter necessarily was traumatized by. I think it's something that happened. You're there to report on it. That's your job. Not showing up to work at the end of it all, that seems odd to me, especially when we're talking not just about one person.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I didn't walk through that field. You know, I didn't. I think it's hard to make that call. I think people that were actually trapped in the building and saw like crazies, like, you know, running around, they saw, like, you know, people go down. I think maybe that was traumatic. And It's kind of tempting for guys like you and me to kind of go, okay, well, when I grew up, you know, we would throw some dirt on it and we'd walk it off. But I'm not so sure. I'm not completely dismissing you like I did on the previous two points that you raised, but I'm pretty close to dismissing
go
you.
Go ahead and just dismiss him,
first
Scott.
First of all, I'm 44 years old. I don't. I hardly have a back in my day. I'm 44. Come on now.
You talk like 44. You do those sometimes.
44. You're a middle-aged white dude, okay? You're the epitome of the, you know what, dude, you haven't walked in my shoes story.
Carmen, one thing I will say about this story, in addition to the fact that I completely and most utterly disagree with basically everything that Ryan said on today's show on this topic, is that I think that the fact that this conversation is being had, that there are reporters that are speaking publicly about trauma that they've suffered on the job, is a very positive step in the right direction when it comes to both your and my previous industries, being journalism. It's mental health is not something that's really talked about inside newsrooms. I think you'd probably agree with that.
Yeah, and Ryan, I just want to say, like, Tamara's probably far too humble to say this, but when it comes to talking about trauma survivors and the trauma that journalists have experienced, she's the expert. Like, she's done the research, she knows this stuff, and I think, you know, out of all of us, we can rely on her for that information. But I'll say this from my personal experience as a breaking news reporter, I'm not backing down
from my point, Carmen, just for the record, but please continue, Carmen.
Okay, look, as a breaking news reporter, like, you're the first one to the crime scene, you're the first one to, you know, an accident, so I've definitely covered some things that could be traumatic, and I've never once said I'm not doing that because of what it is. How people have internalized it later on is something else, and I could just point to my own personal example, how I've changed over the years. Like, before I had children, I could cover stories about children, no problem. I remember coming back from a mat leave and having to you know, interview someone it was about a homicide that involved a child, and I couldn't get through it. Like, and that was just from my own personal experience. And I just think, you know, people handle things differently at different points in people's lives. And I don't think you can judge people or say that you know how they feel or how they might deal with something. I would also say, why do you think these journalists would put themselves out there speaking out about how they're feeling? What do they have to gain by doing that? And especially when it puts them in a vulnerable position. So that's what I would add to the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, Carmen, you just mentioned that you would never say no to an assignment. And I don't know if that's because you felt like you could handle it or because, and I like many journalists who have reached out to me in recent months, they've said, I would never say no to an assignment because then I might be sidelined for the next big story. There's that fear that exists in a lot of newsrooms that if you show any sign of weakness, then you'll be sidelined and you won't get to cover the big news of the day on a day that you may feel ready for it.
Let's move on to what's going on in Ottawa today. And again, this criticism is not coming from me, but social media is already jumping on this announcement. The federal government plans to launch a national ad campaign aimed at making more white Canadians knowledgeable about systemic racism. A number of the criticisms, again, Scott, this is not me saying this, but a number of people are saying this is. I have not commented on this publicly today, so you can have a fresh comment on it yourself. A lot of people are saying that this is a little rich coming from the Prime Minister, who of course had a blackface scandal, that he's now going to educate white people on systemic racism.
Yeah, I don't care about that point. I literally don't care about that point. You know, the blackface thing is a real thing, and he's taken lumps on it, and I think he's going to continue to take lumps on it. I think it's going to be something that people always raise with him, and that's right. That, you know, in all honesty, I think that's right, that should hang around your neck a little bit. That doesn't have any effect on whether, you know, this is needed. And I got to tell you, man, like, I grew up in small town Eastern Ontario. I'm a 53-year-old white guy. You can learn new stuff and you can have your eyes opened. And I listen to a lot of friends that are my age sit around the bar, you know, or these days the patio, and bitch and moan about this and that. And it's a good idea. It's a good idea to say, you know what? There are actually shoes you've not walked in. There are things you're not conscious of, and there are considerations you're not weighing. And I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. And you know what? I think while there's a lot of people in our society who would resist that and say, and, you know, resist the idea that they don't know everything, I think that the events that have transpired over the last year, both with Black Lives Matter, Stop Asian Hate, the indigenous issues that we've been faced with, have shown a lot of people how much they don't know. And I know a lot of people in my own life, family and friends, who are saying, oh my God, I don't know anything about residential schools, or I didn't know about all this Asian hate that was going on. So I actually think that now might be a good time, Carmen, to be presenting this material so that people who are eager to learn have a way to find it.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think any opportunity to educate and make people more aware about systemic racism is a good one. I don't care that it's coming from the federal government. I also think, like, I understand what they were saying in terms of targeting, like, the white demographic, but I actually think that's a little odd. Like, I think everyone could benefit from this type of education, so it shouldn't just be targeted towards white people.
We talked a little bit about this. It seems like a good idea. I don't know how much opposition it's going to get or pushback it's going to get. Judging by this panel, anything I say is going to get pushback, so let's just go for it. I like the idea of people being able to get paid on a daily basis if they want to. It's a new piece of technology that's being tried out. Scott, we've got about 30 seconds each here. You like it or no?
I hate it. It's a way to screw the working man.
Forget it.
Do you say that because it's dangling something in front of them instead of giving them proper wages?
Yeah, I do. You know what? If we want to have this discussion and we don't have time now, I'd be like, let's talk about restoring unionization on a much more broad-based level. Like, I think this is a bad idea and a bad trend.
All right. Norma Ray. Carmen, you got 20 seconds here. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I like it too. I think it's money that is yours. You've worked for it. So if you want to, you know, get it on a day-by-day basis, then you think you should be allowed to.
Yeah, I think it breaks down a lot of things like the payday lender cycles that people go through and, you know, emergency bills that come up for people. But we're going to have to leave that for another day, as Scott said. Scott, enjoy the game tonight, buddy. I mean that for real.
Say go Habs go. Please, Ryan, say go Habs go.
No go Habs go.
No chance.
Right.
After that panel, no chance. I'd be more likely to give you a weather report that includes nothing but lightning. Carmen, thank you as well.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. And of course, thanks to our crew this afternoon that included Mike and Nick and Donnie. Tamara, thank you as well. We'll come back tomorrow, do it all again. What does that sound like? Good idea, bad idea?
Sounds great. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for the good debates.
Don't forget, you can check out the podcast. It's called The Snack on the iHeartRadio app. The CTV News is coming your way in a matter of moments.